This is part two of our discussion with Karch Karai on passing.
Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
What do you think about a pre-hop in serve receive, kind of like you see with tennis players, kind of hop forward and balanced? Or do you think passers should be completely still and have one movement to the ball?
I'm not averse to a pre-hop, but I'm not so keen on the word hop. If I were to tell you, in a second, I'm going to make a noise and you've got to run for your life. Or if, you know, somebody had a gun and just said, look, run for your life, you wouldn't just stand there and go. You would actually load yourself and kind of load your muscles with an eccentric move of some sort. That's why people who sprint don't start from a standstill, from a standing position. They're already loaded down in the blocks. But to be able to move quickly in a direction like forward or left or right, we actually have to load our quads and our other leg muscles a little. And that actually, you could think of it like compressing a spring. And so in some ways, I wouldn't call it a hop so much as a bit of a split step, where maybe my feet go a tiny bit wider. Maybe my center of gravity gets a tiny bit lower. Now I'm primed, I'm in a better position. I'm more primed to pounce or to attack that serve that's coming at me. But what happens, what you often see when players have been coached to pre-hop, is that instead of what I just described, they're actually hopping like a foot in the air. And so that means that when the serve or the attack's actually contacted, they're not even touching the ground. What often it turns into is like a mini jump into the air. And I'm not so much a fan of that, because now I've got to get back down on the ground or back in contact with the sand or the floor before I can start to move. So I try to avoid the word hop. We try to avoid that with our middle blockers. Same thing. Our middles have to compress a little. They have to push that spring down a little so that they can explode out to either sideline to when they have to move laterally some significant distance to block a hitter in opposing zone four or zone one, a left side or right side hitter. So the same concept applies, but we don't talk about a pre-hop. We talk more about like a load or a compression or a bit of a split step.
Cool. Yeah. Cause I definitely see, especially on the beach playing defense, you see some players take some pretty exaggerated kind of hop fours to load. Yeah. I like that feedback.
Yeah, I'm not averse to getting a little lower, getting a little more sprung. When I played defense, I felt like that helped me. If I moved my feet a few more inches apart, if I lowered myself a little, it just helped me be primed to move faster and farther than if I didn't do that.
Cool. And one more, I see on the beach sometimes is a passer starting really deep and then kind of walking into it, like kind of as the server's tossing, he's still kind of getting stopped, but there's this forward momentum. I guess with that, what are your thoughts on that?
When I was passing, I wanted to try to, work with a mentality that I have two choices. Either I'm going to let the server push me around, or I'm going to try and push the server around. And I wanted to do the latter. I wanted to be more proactive rather than reactive and impose myself on the serve rather than have it push me around. And so I didn't start really deep and take several steps in, but in the course of my routine, I always stepped toward the server. probably about a foot. So in my routine and in getting ready to actually pass the serve, one of the last things I would do, a couple of big things I would do is A, move a little toward the server, because my mentality was I want to push you around and I want to dominate this serve. I don't want the opposite. I don't want the serve dominating me. And if I'm moving backwards, I didn't have that. I couldn't keep that same mindset of dominating. I felt like the serve was then pushing me around. And then the other one was that I consistently had a breath as part of my passing routine. And it was, I don't know, I guess it came more from martial arts, or maybe baseball hitters might do this sometimes too. They might be doing like a diaphragmatic breath out as they're getting ready to make some dynamic move. Or maybe if a martial artist is getting ready to strike, they're not breathing in while they're getting ready to strike. They're actually breathing out and engaging their core more and releasing some, I guess, some tension too, especially when you get to, you know, the important or the later part of a match when the score is tied and it's 23 all or 20 all, something like that. I found that it helped me. So if you sat close to the court and listened closely, you might hear me do a bit of a, I would actually want to make a little noise with it, but it was a diaphragmatic breath. And that too helped me prime to explode or pounce after a serve, and it would sound just something like as I was trying to engage my core a little and step forward and try to, in a figurative sense, dominate a serve coming at me.
I feel like that would mess me up if I was serving you. It'd scare me.
I don't know about that, but in moments where the match just felt like there was more tension, I might even exaggerate it a little, and it was my way of releasing some of that tension and helping myself just focus on the next task at hand a little more, where sometimes it's natural for the mind to wander and start getting ahead.
When it comes to, along the same lines as dominating the server, would you ever move laterally to kind of show them one thing and then take it away, as far as maybe show them a little line open and then step into it to mess with them that way?
I knew players who did that. You know, if we're talking beach for a second and you have somebody like Phil serving at you, you better be really careful with the games that you're playing. And so, because if you even lean a little bit in the wrong direction, you might have no chance at making that pass. And so I tended to not do that. And I just wanted to be really balanced and really engaged in my read and really ready to pounce and move in any direction. Because I found that for me, generally trying to play games like that, about, you know, maybe half the time it might help me, but the other half the time I might then be moving away from where I needed to go. So I just, again, in the interest in simplicity, I tended not to try to lure servers into certain things and more just challenge them. Hey, you know, if you want to serve this space around me, go for it. I'm ready to move in that direction, but I'm also ready to move in other directions if your toss goes in a different way or the wind blows it and things like that. I have to... my emphasis was on balance more than trying to lure somebody into serving in a certain direction.
Cool. And I guess for the coaches out there, can you give us some differences when it comes to focus on passing a float serve versus topspin serve that they can help their players with?
For one thing, The spin tends to be, except if it goes really far away from you, it tends to be an easier serve to pass because it's just more predictable. The serve has, with the spin that it has, it has a path that breaks through the air and through the wind with more predictability. That's the whole idea of a float serve, is that it's unpredictable. And so, but the counter to the jump spin is that it's going to come faster. And so I've got to be especially diligent in getting my platform. I've got to get a good angle out there and get the ball, get the platform as quickly into the line of the ball as I possibly can. And then also know that, especially early in a match where maybe I'm not, maybe our team doesn't have servers who serve at the same velocity as this new opponent, then a really good point of emphasis is start by angling a jump spin server. Make the error or choose to start by passing the ball a little too far off the net instead of a little too close. And then it's always easier to work your way a little closer than to pass the first two balls over the net, give away two free points. And they're all, as you guys know, and everybody listening knows, all of our points are worth the same. The early ones are just as valuable as the ones at 24 all, but I hate giving up easy points at any time in any given game to 25 or 21. And so get a sense of the server's pace early. You might not have a good sense of it, but touching a few of them gives you more of a sense of it. And so have some patience there and start by angling off. And then for float servers, it's critical that you not only get a good read on it early, but that you follow it, because your good read might mean very little on a really good float server, or if you're on the beach and some server is serving into the wind and hits it nicely with no spin and it's got pace on it, it might drift 5, 7, 9 or more feet. And so I have to get a good read, but I got to stay really balanced to be able to track that if it starts breaking off in a brand new direction, or it just keeps moving. It started moving and keeps moving. We've all seen crazy float servers like that just take off, and even the server didn't really have control over what that did. The server was just trying to initiate the ball and put it on a path where it might jump like that. And so we have to be a lot more prepared to move with balance, and we might even shuffle one way and have to shuffle another. And that's why we don't want to cross our feet when passing good float serves, because it can move so much indoors and maybe even more so on the beach into a stiff wind.
Does your feedback change when you're in a tutor versus a competitive wash drill or a match when it comes to serve receive stuff?
It does. For me as a player, I tended to want to focus a lot less on the technical aspects of the game once I was competing than I might have in training or in tutoring. Some of our players might want a little more of that, but generally I found that a lot of specific feedback on technique tended to get in the way. Like that's a tough time to be making lots of adjustments. Generally, I feel like I'm going to compete better, and a lot of the players that I coach will compete better if they get to a competitive situation and know they've done the work, they've built a good foundation, they have a game that they can trust, and so I will just trust that. Now, maybe somebody needs a reminder or a question. You know, if somebody's been working on keeping their grip together because it was breaking apart, and then we're competing and it starts to break together, then that might be a good time to ask. So, you know, how'd your grip do on that last three passes, or how was your hold? And they might, you know, he or she might say, oh, whoa, you know what? Now that you mention it, I think I got away from that a little. And I know I've been working on that and doing well in training at it. So that might be a good reminder. But it's a fine line of, you know, feedback on technical things versus feedback on what we're going to do tactically to put our opponent under stress, or to try to take away their favorite things, or make them more uncomfortable.
Do you guys talk much about the target, like where you guys want to put it, and what is your guys' ideal target?
Our ideal target is, and this is for our indoor women's team, I would say is dead center of the court. Even though we don't have our setter standing dead center of the court, but dead center of the court, a couple feet off the net, and with enough height that our setter can have the space to be able to work and set any set. I said the target's in the center, but the setter's not, and that's because the target is one thing, but the reality is another. And if I'm aiming for a target, part of the time I'm going to miss it to one side of the target, and part of the time I'm going to miss it to the other. And if we had our setter stand at the actual target, then part of the time she'd be not having to move at all. Part of the time she'd have to move forward. We like that. We like setters moving forward. And then part of the time she'd be moving backward, closer to the zone two side, to our zone two sideline. We don't want that. We don't. Our offense breaks down really quickly when our setters are moving backward, and so that's why we don't have our setter actually stand at what is probably the ideal place to set. We'd rather have her stand in a place where she can move forward to set most of the time, and we don't mind her moving 5-6 feet forward. Even beyond the center of the court, if that pass has enough height, all of a sudden we might be running a one set or a quick set, and it might be closer to the opposing right side blocker now, and that tends to drive them crazy. It's really difficult to block a quick hitter in their zone and then a left side hitter right over that with an overload. So we don't mind our setters moving forward, but that target is generally dead center of the court, a couple feet off the net. We're also not big fans of putting the ball too close to the net, because depending on the height and the jump of our setters, again, just putting it a few inches over is giving a free point to the other team. So we're way happier with a pass 10 feet off the net than one 6 inches over the net.
Awesome. And Karch, we have two more selfish questions for us, and then some listener questions to kind of that are kind of all over the map. So if you coached or still played on the beach, what passing drills would you be doing?
I don't know if I'm more of the Marv Dunphy school of work, and that the best passing drills involve serve, pass, set, hit, and the best attacking drills involve live, serve, pass, set, hit. And basically, the more it looks like real volleyball, the more game-like it is, the more transfer I'm going to get out of all those opportunities to respond. So I would tend to lean toward things that lead to a live situation, and it would be a little less about controlled circumstances and just passing, but at least for our team, because the pass and the set and the approach are also critical for us to be able to side out well. I wouldn't be spending a lot of time on just passing, And I'd be spending a lot more time on, let's say, the passing, the pass set hit, the combination of what we need to do to side out at a high rate. So I don't know, something that we used to do when I was playing is it was more in the lines of, okay, there's a team across the net. They're serving and defending. And for us, we have, we might get 12 or 24 serves, something like that, and or some number where our aim was to side out at least 75%. So if we were, if the other team served 24 times, 24 serves that went in, we wouldn't count the misses, then we would need to side out at least 18 of them. So we might, out of 24, might be 18. And then we would try, when it was our turn on defense, we would try to hold the team down to lower than 75% when it was their turn to side out. I remember one time we were training down at the beach, and I'm still mad at myself because I had the chance to, clean the table putting every ball in billiards. But my partner, I think, tweaked his knee a little or something. Somehow he couldn't continue, but he had driven a good distance. So we just said, all right, I will do all the siding out and you'll just set, but we'll just see if I can, I'll just see, can I side out 24 times in a row? So they had to serve my half of the court, and I made 23 straight, and I was livid when I missed the 24th one. I could have skunked the other team, but I fell short. So, but those were the kinds of activities that we were working on is, we were working on passing and setting and siding out or attacking in the context of a competitive drill like that.
It must have been a bad set.
No, I have to say it was a very good set, and I got stuffed. So I thought I had it. I got a little too big for my britches there and took a too big a risk on a good blocker.
Well, I think most people would have been happy with 23 out of 24, but I think that's why you're Karch. So still was a good day.
I was 23 until the 24th happened. Then I was livid with that. First 23 felt pretty darn good.
Yeah. With all you've learned about coaching, if you could go back and make one change to restructure your beach practices, would there be anything you would have changed?
That's a good question. I probably would have worked on trying to manufacture some and work on some more specific situations. Like I said, a lot of the activities we did were kind of mini competitions, mini games. But now that I look back on it, I could have been better in certain aspects of my transition. We could probably, my partners and I could have used some extra practice in setting the trouble play, like a dig that forces us to run 20 or 25 feet. So there are some certain situations. And then also to do it on both sides of the net with both sides or both directions of wind. So I probably would have spent more time with some specific situations like digging to near the back line. And what does the setter and what can the setter and what can the hitter do to maximize their chances of scoring on a play like that, which is a difficult play to score on because the set's coming from so deep in the court that it's very difficult for the hitter to get a good view of the blocker. It's hard to keep the ball in front of you to where you can see both the ball and the block. I probably would have spent a lot more time on some extra nuance to try to squeeze out a 0.5%, 1%, 1.5% advantage.
And if you guys were doing that out of system drill, would you just have the digger dig it to the end line, or would you have a coach toss something in?
I think that I would try to do it off a platform. And I know that takes a little more time. Maybe the numbers of repetitions might be a little less, but I feel like actually working off of a dig from a defender, and so maybe the assignment for the defender, maybe it's a controlled hit. Maybe the blocker is just saying, look, I'm going to take line, hit her across the net, you hit cross court, hit it at 80%, and then the digger gets to control how or where that ball goes, and that digger needs to put a good number of them by the end line, but not all of them, so that the blocker isn't just running to that spot. The blocker has to come down and read his or her own defender's platform. So that's what I would try to do, is manufacture it, but start it with some control, and then have the digger, who's working on getting better at hitting off that dig, mix in a variety of locations for that dig, so that the setter doesn't know where it's going to go, and the digger, who has to turn into a transition hitter, has to receive a variety of sets from a variety of locations.
You might have won a couple more tournaments if you would have had that, huh?
That would be the hope. There's always more.
There's more? I don't know. 145 is a lot.
Yeah, whatever it was. That was a good number, but
it's a pretty good number.
It's easy. The ones that I remember most in general are the ones that got away. I can remember very vividly. Well, there was a certainly one that's easy to come to mind. And if Hav and Dodd were listening, they would snicker and laugh at it too. But there was a double final in Phoenix where Kent Steffes and I were winning 6-1. And all we needed to do is get one more point inside out scoring. And Tim Hovland, who was not known for having the greatest serve, he was a great player and a great competitor, but serving was one of the weaker parts of his game. He ended up going back to the service line and serving 6 straight serves and earning 6 straight points, and they won 7-6 on 6 plays. My partner and I never, we just lost focus a little. We didn't call a timeout. We didn't make any adjustments, and it was just a train wreck. So that there's one that's very easy to point back to and say, man, we had that one in our pocket and we let it slip away. But I'm also sure it probably gets evened out a little because my partner and I stole a few from others too.
Well, I doubt Hav listens, but Patty Dodd listens, so she can tell Mike.
There we go.
Thanks for listening to Coach Your Brains Out. Join us next week for one more round with Karch Karai as he fields listener questions on a variety of topics.